From the mythologized legacy of Nelson Mandela in South Africa that we spoke about at the beginning of this hour to the myth of racial inferiority kept alive for centuries by American institutions to the reality of who is vulnerable in our time. Who are the powerless, the invisible, the people who inhabit the chilly place that government doesn't reach in our time, that prosperity avoids, that hope cannot change. They're not news, but how they survive. The details of the life of a child whose day begins in a homeless shelter, proceeds to school, and then back not to home, but to homelessness. The details feel new, unfamiliar, just as they are everyday life to the children living this vulnerability, living in this chill. Andrea Elliott is an investigative reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Welcome.
Hi, it's good to be here.
So you discovered this detail of life as a homeless person in New York in your investigation of a young 11-year-old by the name of Dasani. She was on the front page of the paper yesterday, an absolutely arresting picture, an amazing person. You're an investigative reporter. When you encountered her life, her day-to-day life, how amazing was it to see what it is that she had to go through?
Amazing would be the word I would use to describe my daily experience following Dasani and her family through their struggles in New York City. I was constantly amazed and surprised.
You spent a year with them?
Spent more than a year. We started in September of 2012, and we've continued to follow them until the series ran just now. So I'm a New Yorker, and it made me see the city with new eyes.
What city does Dasani see in the course of her day?
Dasani basically sees a city that is out of reach. So what I think is so fascinating about Dasani's experience of poverty and what distinguishes that experience from the experience her mother had, for instance, in Brooklyn years ago as a child, is that she is in such close proximity to wealth. The shelter where they live is in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, which has been a part of the city's very radical renewal over the last decade.
And there are $1 million homes on Washington Street in Fort Greene.
$2 million brownstones. Yes. And it's really been – it's just been transformed. The number of residents jumped – white residents jumped by 80% in the last decade. It's become a place that has, for instance, the block that she spends a lot of time on Myrtle, has a 99-cent store and a fancy wine shop and a very simple deli where you can trade food stamps for cigarettes and a bike repair shop that sells vegan cookies. It's really this fascinating mix of things. And so she's constantly exposed to the things that she cannot have.
What are her possibilities? What does she think of as her possibilities, her
dreams? She's thought of all kinds of things. I mean, it's hard because Dasani is a kid who says she doesn't dream. I think for her, it's very scary to get excited or hopeful because in her experience, when you do that, it gets taken away from you. And that is actually the essence of being homelessness as well, I think, in their experience. You never know what's going to happen the next day, where home will be. You can't get attached. And so in spite of that, I think she does think about things like trying to go to college. Her peers in her school, Susan S. McKinney, which today's story focuses on, and the incredible role that that school plays in keeping her really nourished. Her peers and a lot of these kids, the vast majority of the middle school children are also from the projects and from families that are poor. They will often talk about sort of drastic escapes like becoming a rap star or a music mogul or an athlete. And as I mentioned in the story, I mean, it does sort of make sense to her that in order to escape this, everything is kind of in extremes here. It's an extreme existence. So she's in extreme poverty. In order to escape it, she needs to do something extreme. But she doesn't really buy into that for herself. She doesn't allow herself to go there.
Do you think she believes in the system in America that it's possible to escape, that if you work hard, get good grades, civically involved, do the right thing?
These are things that children in this community always hear, and they're sort of like ideas that just get repeated so often that they almost become tired or sort of worn.
Insulting, almost.
I think her daily existence is so uncertain and so challenging that she doesn't really think that much about the future. She's very rooted in the present. And when it comes to her assessment of the system, so to speak, it's very interesting because this is a kid who actually is very familiar with city politics and policy decisions just by virtue of the fact that they impact her, that things going on in the city really reach her. For instance, the attempt to ban large sugary drinks was something that really troubled her because in her family, the 16-ounce soda is shared by 8 children. So it became an economic issue, not a diabetes or obesity issue. When the citywide bus strike happened, she suddenly found herself having to walk her 3 youngest children to school. So she knew about it.
So as an investigative reporter, she is in your reach to be able to experience her world. Do you think the life that you live is out of Dasani's reach?
At the moment, I think it is. I think this is a child who's capable of anything. So moving the conversation a little bit away from her, she's an extraordinary child, and to the broader population she represents, what's become clear to me is that school is absolutely essential. School is a substitute home for homeless children. And it really, in terms of all of the supports in place, to my mind, the thing that is most anchoring, that is most important. And if she has a shot or her homeless peers have a shot, it's because these schools will get them through. But homelessness brings very, very traumatic experiences to children, and the odds are stacked against them.
You said there are details of Dasani's life that you could not have imagined until you experienced it as a reporter. Can you imagine an arena filled with 22,000 homeless kids like Dasani, looking at all of them simultaneously?
I have often thought about that, and it is in the story for that reason, because it helps to try to visualize it, and it's overwhelming to think about. The number of homeless children when Mayor Bloomberg took office was about 13,000, so it's substantially larger, and it was at a crisis point then.
And the snow's falling today. We're going to get 5 inches, and in that cold and vulnerability, your thoughts go to Dasani.
Yes, they do. Very much so.
Be a cold walk home from school for her.
She's a very tough kid. I don't know, to my mind, one of the kind of humorous moments in the reporting was to discover that at a private school near her shelter, all of these parents of means paid quite a bit of money to hear this clinical psychologist give a talk on how to raise resilient kids in a nervous and entitled world. And it really struck me because, and there's nothing wrong with that, and plenty of parents relate to these anxieties and these issues. But to spend time with these kids, it really gave me a completely different sense of what resilience is. I don't know how she manages, but she does. She just has enormous capacity to roll with the punches and survive. It's really a survival thing. And it's an intuitive kind of intelligence that I think, and people who have observed her in school think, really is a combination of rare smarts and life experience.
Andrea Elliott, investigative reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Andrea Elliott's series on that homeless family in New York is running all week in The New York Times. The U.S., one of you in Georgia writes, should now stand for and protect against economic injustice. Join the conversation. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.